On my behalf, my turn this morning to wish everyone a good morning and welcome to our conference. We're kicking off the telco section for today. We have BC Rogers Telus today all lined up this morning, so I'm sure it's going to be interesting. I am Jérôme Dubreuil, equity analyst here covering the telcos and tech at Desjardins. And we have BC this morning. We're very glad to welcome Glen LeBlanc to our conference this morning. Glen, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Great. So why don't we start with your largest segment on wireline? You know, we saw 2 weeks ago a bit of a change of a tone in terms of the CRTC being a bit more aggressive than it had been over the last few years. You know, it initiated a review on the wholesale pricing and also cut part of wholesale rates by 10%. Do you expect an impact in the marketplace?
Yeah, it starts with how unprecedented it was that rates were cut without any public process or any submission by those affected. And for cost studies, that's never been done before. So that was a bit surprising. I think we have to step back and look at how this feels like it flies in the face of what governments have been trying to do in our country for the last number of years, which is encourage investment. So we went through a period of time where there was some tension with regulatory bodies, but would have to say fairly benign the last number of years. And I think part of that was how well Canada showed during the pandemic, which showed the importance of having quality networks and the investments that are required to have quality networks in this country. I would say not a week passes that I don't hear from a municipality or a provincial representative or federal representative talking about areas where their constituents are feeling underserved without having adequate networks. And more as we look, as our country is expanding population and healthy immigration numbers that we have, it's going to mean a population that's expanding beyond just urban centers and into suburban and rural, and that's what we want as Canadians. Is to do that. We're a very, very broad geography with a sparsely populated country. And the only way that we are going to ensure that Canadians have the best networks into the future is if we make investment. So if you're going to introduce policies that stifle investment, it's going to result in the rural, more difficult areas to serve in this country are going to be underserved. So I'm a bit surprised that the tone shifted. I guess I'll say maybe rational minds will prevail as we have further dialogue and discussions. But this isn't good for connecting Canada and ensuring that every Canadian has access to the best networks and high-speed infrastructure. And then, you know, the second discussion that's been taking place now a lot with government is the network resiliency agenda. Well, how do you think that's going to play out if we're not making investment? We know that climate change is resulting in storms we've never experienced before in this country. Hurricane Fiona that hit the Atlantic coast this year was the most expensive and disruptive storm in Canadian history. Well, everything I read tells me they're not going away. So if the government wants us to make heavier investment in redundancy and resiliency of our networks, then if wholesale rates or open access to fiber and wholesale rates that aren't compensatory occur, then I can almost assure you that every large carrier will stop the investment. You're left with no choice. We have, you know, a shareholder that we're responsible to, and if you can't get an adequate return on the investment, then we're not going to make that investment. So I'm a little surprised because it does fly in the face of other agendas that the government has, but it's early. And as I said, I remain optimistic that mature dialogue will lead us to a better state.
So it seems like you do anticipate some sort of impact if you think it might have an impact on your investment.
Well, I would say, you know, we're in a wait and see mode on that file, but it's pretty simple. If you're not able to get the type of return that we need on the investment we're making, then you're going to have to question the making of the investment. Now, it's so funny because there's so many government subsidies out now encouraging us to make these rural investments. And how the government subsidy works, simplistically different by every province, but for the most part, it is an attempt by the government to cover the uneconomic portion of the build so that we build in areas that wouldn't otherwise be built. Well, if you give open access that drives the uneconomic portion higher, then that just means government subsidies are going to be higher or nobody's building. So it's a bit of a head-scratcher.
Yeah, no, mixed signals for sure. Still last on that topic, you know, historically you've been able to pace your CapEx depending on how accommodative the regulatory environment was. Now, your strategy on fiber has evolved and you seem more bullish as ever on fiber. Is it really possible for you to adjust your fiber investments depending on what's going to happen on the wholesale rate file?
Yeah, sure. I think it's around the rural edges, which is unfortunately the area that, as I said, the government is pushing most to have investment. But we believe that right now our plan of record is to have 10 million homes covered with fiber or fixed wireless, so probably 9 million fiber, 1 million fixed wireless, which brings us to about 10 million of our homes of our footprint. We think we'll end this year at about 7.7 million, so that leaves about 1.3 million fiber homes to cover. Naturally, along this fiber construction journey, we're going after the easiest ones first and the ones that give you the highest return. Those last 1.3 million will be the most challenging. And if, as I said, if you're uncertain about the return on investment or the wholesale rates that are put in place, then I think those 1.3 million have to be stared down. You know, the fiber journey has worked incredibly well for us. We're taking share. I think Canadians now, globally, people now know that fiber is the best network and it can deliver speeds cable can't, you know, upload speeds in particular, but they can't match symmetrical. And, you know, we've gone out early days selling 1 gig and then it was 1.5 and then it was 3. And, you know, now we have an offering of 8 and before long it'll be greater than that. And those type of speeds are attractive for Canadians. If you can be price competitive and you have a superior network, you know, we're going to win. But if the open access is such that you can't get an adequate return.
On resiliency too. I think it's fair to say that you are competing harder in fixed than you had been over the previous decade. And for example, I think it's easy to understand that you've deployed a lot of fiber and now you want to onboard customers on this fiber. But is this level of competition a new normal, or do you expect to revert back to maybe what we had seen previously once you're happy with the market share you have on your fiber?
Well, the level of competition is really, it speaks to the billions of dollars we've sunk in the ground to put fiber in, and now it's time to load that network. So if you step back 5 or 6 years ago, from DSL evolution to fiber to the node evolution, and then ultimately fiber to the prem, let's be honest, through that technology evolution, cable had the advantage on fiber and DSL, or on fiber to the node and DSL, which resulted in us becoming having materially less market share in most of the urban centers than cable. It's around 34, 35, 36% is where we were 5 years ago. So if you build fiber, what we're experiencing now is, given the choice, if you can be price competitive, people will choose the better network. And now we're seeing areas where our most mature fiber footprint is, we have well north of 50%, like well north. So the opportunity in front of us here now is, as we build fiber out to 9 million homes, is to, why wouldn't you expect us to reach market share equilibrium? We could sit here and debate the time horizon. Can you do it in 3 years, Glenn? Can you do it in 6?
That's my next question.
But you are going to reach market share equilibrium. If Mirko was sitting here, he'd say market share equilibrium is not good enough. If you have network superiority, which we will, then we should be north of 50%, and we are in Atlantic Canada, where our most mature fiber footprint is. So are we competing harder? Yeah, I guess we're in the game now. So now you can compete. Before, it was difficult to compete. So what opportunities does this give us is it's not only can we take share from 36 to north of 50, yes, we're also seeing our existing customer base want to move up the value chain of the quality of the offering. So when we sell 8 gig, people are taking it, and people will look to take higher speeds. So they move up the speed curve. So that gives us an opportunity for monetizing the network. And then the final piece is more and more Canadians, more and more consumers are looking to buy in a bundled fashion. Right. If you start the sales process with an inferior wireline internet offering, the likelihood of pulling the other products with you gets challenging. Well, now we're walking into the home with the best internet offering. And I think that's going to give us a great chance to take what we call it, M&I, it's mobility and internet per home. We want to win the home, M&I and ancillary products like TV. So I think by building this network and being up on your toes, leaning forward, the revenue opportunities to upsell existing, take market share, and then pull other products, this is a great little run. And really the reason in 2020 we said it's time to stop building fiber at the pace we are. It's time to double down and build it because you know it works. Just get it over with. Like build the fiber network. So by the end of 2025, we'll have virtually completed our fiber build.
So if I'm looking at this 2025 on the fiber build, takes a couple of years to onboard customers to the market share you are hoping or working to reach. So we still have quite a few years ahead of us of that competitive intensity within the markets you're deploying right now. Am I reading this right?
Yeah, it's going to be competitive, but I would say it's an opportunity for us to take share but not be irresponsible in the pricing manner in which we do it. I still think the industry can enjoy some great growth, and as I mentioned earlier, the population growth in the country is going to be, that's great news. I think we can all enjoy nice growth without destroying margins, because I think Canadians are prepared to pay for quality, and if we can deliver quality networks, there will be an interest to continue to upgrade your home to a better quality.
Yeah. Speaking of margins, growth can be expensive. So now you've invested in fiber. Now time to onboard the customers on fiber. We see a lot of bell ads these days with all sorts of cable puns and and these things. But basically, that has a cost. And us as analysts or investors, we're trying to see where the margins could land in a few years once you start easing off a bit on the advertising and marketing. Can you give a bit of color on what are the costs that are related to that specific growth, specific to that fiber onboarding project?
One of the greatest opportunities in front of us is the fiber network. When you think about what we've been trying to do, we're operating two networks now, a copper network and a fiber network, and naturally the copper network was stretched well beyond what its initial uses were ever intended for. Our trouble rates are materially higher on copper than they are fiber. So as you get to a point now where you have really rebuilt your 140-year-old copper network for all intents and purposes, with the exception of a few million rural, we won't get to yet. We watch everything change in our cost structure. We're reduction of truck rolls. We want calls to the contact center. Customer satisfaction goes up. So once we can get to that mass where fiber right now is, as I said, complete and represents the largest part of our network, we see a significant opportunity to take costs out of the business. You've heard us talk about the hot home before. When we connect fiber to the home, if we connect it to your home, what we would do now is that home would be a hot home, such that when you moved, the next person purchasing that home really doesn't require a truck roll. Everything is self-install. So how do we eliminate the complexities of electronics in the home? How do we ensure simplicity of self-install? You can even do videos to help people on our website to do their self-install, reduce truck rolls because of the lack of troubles. Fiber has no electronics in the network where fiber to the home does. You start to see how much opportunity to take costs out of the day-to-day operations of. And that's where I see the protection of margins in the future. And although we talk about it, it's a little more on the medium-term horizon. The next opportunity is elimination of your copper network, copper decommissioning. You know, I think we're a couple, 3 years before we start to see anything material out of that. We just did two CEOs last year as trials. The reason why I say trials is you have to be careful when you're force migrating customers that you don't force them into the hand of a competitor. They were fine with the services you gave them. They were operating on the old copper network. They had no interest in upgrading to fiber. And now you're saying, we're moving you over. You had a trouble on your phone line. You had a trouble on your DSL or your FTTN line. And when we roll that truck, we will be moving you to the new network. What we were doing the trial for is to see what the propensity of churn would be. And would they say, well, if I have to make a change, I think I'll shop and see what else is out there. Early indications are great. We're going to do about a dozen more COs this year. So we're quite excited about it. I don't want to oversell it because when you think of the number of COs we have, this is a journey. But early indications are that's going well. And in 3-4 years' time, I think copper decommissioning could be something we're sitting here talking about that is delivering real cost opportunity.
Yes, and we've seen TELUS taking that roadmap before, and it has given confidence to some of the investors that that this roadmap can work. So good for you to walk in that. In that field. So one of the most compelling aspects, I think, investing in BC is, you know, you have one of the best overlaps between your wireless and wireline networks. And once the fiber deployment is completed, you'll have approximately 75% of the country that's fully overlapped with your own networks. Mm-hmm. Important to mention. I think the whole industry is going towards a full integration or trying to have the most overlap possible. What are the benefits that you are seeing? Why is everyone doing this right now at the same time?
Well, as I said a moment ago, I think it's the consumer behavior is driving towards one provider, one solution. I want to buy my telecommunication services from one. Give me a package and a bundle that simplifies my buying experience, my relationship with you. I want you to simplify my billing. I want you to simplify my contact center that I have to call or my support desk that I need. So what we're trying to do is shift the way we approach the customer. I don't know if you noticed that we mentioned on our fourth quarter call that we changed our reporting. Well, we didn't change our reporting for the sake of changing reporting. We did it because we changed the way we're structured internally to approach the customer as a segment as opposed to selling by product. We now have a leader of the consumer and small business segment. We have a leader of business, and they sell all products. So with a 75% overlap of a fiber network, best internet experience possible, we should be able to do a better job of selling that customer, bundling that customer, and providing what the customer wants as a simplified experience. I don't think customers necessarily want to purchase products from two or three different carriers. They want value, and they want simplicity in the relationship. And I think that's what we can bring now with the integration of the way we manage our company, the way we approach the customer, the completion of the fiber network. We've got 82% of the population covered in our 5G network now. So you're starting to see, we've been talking about convergence of our networks for a decade, but doesn't it finally feel like it's here?
Yeah. The remaining 25% that you will not have with wireless overlapping wireline is probably be one of the most interesting place in Canada in telecom over the next year or two, because of the merger that's happening between Rogers and Shaw. Now, the bundle typically allows you to better defend yourself. Mm-hmm. You've recently acquired internet resellers. That might be an option for you. Are there other ways to create bundles for you to better defend your wireless market share out west this year?
Yeah, well, our media assets give us the opportunity to do that. With many Canadians choosing to to cord cut or consume content in different manners, we could sell you in bundle Crave, your bundle TSN app or a CTV app with a wireless packaging and give you a viewing experience of some great Canadian content or great global content like HBO that you could enjoy that way. So there is ways we can compete. Yes, we bought resellers, and that is a tool in our toolbox, Distributel and eBox. Right now, our focus is on the 75% of our footprint where we have network. We want to compete on our networks, not utilize others. But we'll see how the competitive landscape shapes. We have tools now that give us opportunities, but it is not our intention or focus at this time.
Okay. You know, during the pandemic, now moving to a full wireless subject, fewer people updated their devices during the pandemic. They weren't going out as much, probably didn't feel the need to do it. Now we've seen an acceleration during the last Black Friday. Can you maybe describe the impact this trend has on your ARPU growth, on your OPEX, and on your working cap for this year?
Yeah, I think Q4 was what I would deem the first normal quarter we've had in 2 years. Every other quarter, it seemed like we were opening retail, we were closing retail. One province was ahead of another province. What we noticed in our metrics in Q4 is that foot traffic was back to historical levels. Malls were open. There were no closures. And I even think the average Canadian's confidence of being out in the public had increased. And what that resulted in is a very undisciplined spend in fourth quarter. I think all of the carriers were chasing the customer who was awake again and back out and shopping and said, this is going to be a big load quarter. We all know that churn through the pandemic was incredibly low as people just weren't shifting. And that was true of all carriers. So we saw this intensity, competitive intensity, promotional activity, which resulted in expensive subsidies and heavy on working capital in fourth quarter. Now, the good news is I felt the boxing week was materially better, where I think we all spent everything we had on Black Friday, but it was a little better intensity in boxing. And the early indication of Q1, I would say the same, is the same promotional activity hasn't been there. So that's good news on subsidizations and ultimately working capital. I think churn is been good, but it's probably going to go back somewhere in between pandemic level and pre-pandemic. People are hanging on to their handsets longer than they ever did before. They get into the contract now where they purchase their handset over 24 months, and when their bill drops on their 25th month, there's not this desire under the historical subsidy model to run back in and upgrade your.
I see the savings. Free. Yeah,
you see the savings. I think my handset's fine. I think I'll enjoy this handset for another 12 or 18 months and see my bill drop. So I think what's really transpiring now. People are hanging on their handsets longer. Churn will probably never go back to pre-pandemic levels, but yes, there's going to be a little spike because there'll be more promotional activity in the markets, as we saw on Black Friday. But these things go in ebbs and flows. Over the years of having this question asked of me, we tend to get very competitive in different geographical markets and different times of the year. But it really is an ebb and a flow. I think somebody goes chasing subs in one quarter and then has to be a bit more responsible on a margin basis the next.
Some companies will need to show profitability this year to deliver in the industry for sure. It should keep everyone in check.
Yep.
Now moving to the other bets section, we saw a few weeks ago Mirko posting on his social media that BC is hiring over 1,000 people in high-tech roles. Also you seem to be more focused on your ventures arm. Are you building a tech company within a telecom company? That would ring a bell to some telecom investors here. Is that the plan?
I think this is, it's just the evolution of who we're becoming. We're not your father's telco anymore. We're really having to evolve, and the 1,000 people we're hiring it's going to be people in cybersecurity. It's going to be people in artificial intelligence. It's people who machine learning experts. We're trying to evolve the way we operate and the efficiencies we can find in the manner we're operating. We actually started something internally called BellU. It's a virtual university where we're trying to upgrade the skills of our employees so that they can fill new roles that wouldn't have been traditional in a traditional telecommunication company. So I think this is following the strategy that we laid out in 2020 of who we want to become and digitize our company, become more productive, find efficiencies in the way we operate, use machine learning, use cloud-based technology. How do we do that? And that's the same of Bell Ventures. Really, that's about we're going to invest billions of dollars in our networks. How do we ensure that we're partnering with developers to build the apps to utilize these high-speed, low-latency networks that we're building, whether that be wireless or whether that be wireline? And that's what Bell Ventures is trying to get in on the ground level with these entrepreneurs and these companies that are trying to develop solutions, get involved, grow with them, learn with them, and find out what opportunities for products and development do they have. Can they bring advanced technological solutions to the market that ultimately rely on the networks we have? And that's where we're focused on. So it's exciting to watch the change, but because we're becoming a tech company, but I don't know that it's all strategy. It's just if you're going to build these networks, you have to find the applications to monetize them. I think we'd all agree that we probably thought we'd be further ahead in 5G apps than we are right now. But they're coming.
I would agree, yes.
We all would have thought, but they're coming. So how do we make sure that we're on the ground level with those companies that are going to be developing them so that we can monetize this network?
Maybe also laying the groundwork for capital allocation once the fiber deployment is completed. So there's projects coming up.
Yeah, I mean, capital allocation. The thing we're most excited about is that the fiber journey is now in the planning horizon. It's no longer a pipe dream that's so far out that you can't reach it, touch it. We're going to complete our fiber network at the end of 2025, and it's going to be the opportunity for us to take capital down closer to the 15% intensity than, you know, call it $4 billion versus $5.2 in 2022. What does that opportunity, does that type of capital savings give us? You know, does it give you the capital allocation flexibility to consider dividend increases beyond what we historically have done? Do you pay down debt? Do you find new opportunities through Bell Ventures and technology investments to advance the efficiencies and opportunities in our company even further? Maybe. But the bottom line is it creates flexibility.
Right.
And all of those are, you know, what investors are going to want from us is the ability to create that flexibility to make investments in capital allocation elsewhere.
I'll squeeze one last here. We have a spectrum auction coming later this year. Typically, these auctions haven't affected your balance sheet as much as your peers, just given your larger size. We also have a different set of rules for the auction this year. You know, there's no set asides. Do you think this could have a material impact on the pricing of spectrum?
Well, I think the fact that there's a 100 megahertz cap between 3.5 and 3.8 is ultimately going to force some price discipline, because I don't think we're really going to be chasing the same spectrum. So I would say, you know, never say never. The bottom line is we are going to acquire the necessary spectrum we require to run our wireless business. That's first and foremost. We are the largest balance sheet and probably the strongest balance sheet right now. So that puts us in a position to ensure, regardless of what happens in pricing discipline, we will be there to acquire. The optimist in me says that this will be a little more disciplined than what we've seen before, and let's hope that this cap results in prices being a little more what we've seen in global auctions than the most recent Canadian auction, which kind of set some global records.
All right. That's all the time we had. Thanks a lot, Glenn. Very insightful, as always.
My pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for joining.
And next is H2O Solutions.
Thank you so much.